Before we begin today's lesson, we want to dedicate the learning today in the schus of Refuah Shleima for Rafael Chaim Meir Ben Simcha Asher, a young boy who needs our prayers and our help, and Hashem should send a speedy recovery, complete and speedy recovery. Okay, this is text-based Tanya. We're still in chapter 39, and we started speaking about kavana, about the intent, the emotions with which we infuse our mitzvahs. And we were speaking about different levels of intent, yeah? Okay. And the different levels of intent depend on where your emotions are coming from. Either you can get them from meditation, or you can get them from the hardwiring of the Jewish soul. And depending on where you got your emotions from, that's how high, so to speak, the mitzvah is going to reach, the mitzvah that was fueled by that intent. So the higher intent goes to Bria, and the lower intent goes to Yetzirah. Remember all this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we spoke about the Malachim being emotional creatures, and that's why they're called Chayis, they're called animals, and they're attached to Yetzirah, which is a more emotional world, as opposed to Bria, which is a more intellectual world. And that basically, when we do the mitzvahs and we learn Torah down here with the right intent, so we're creating reward for ourselves after we get up there to Gan Eden. And that's where we left off. We said, Ki schar mitzvah, hi mitzvah atzma. Right before the two dots, right? There's a Ki schar mitzvah, hi mitzvah atzma, then two dots. And then we're going to continue with the words, Ve'olam ho'atzilus. Ve'olam ho'atzilus. And the world of atzilus, Shulam ailam ha'asech v'asag v'avon alasech nivra. It is above a limited created being's intellect. Remember, we said Bria is a world of intellect. Everything there is all about understanding Hashem and the pleasure in Bria, which is Gan Eden Ha'Elyon. If you remember that also, yeah, is all based on the pleasure in Bria is about understanding Hashem. So that's Bria. It's all understanding. Like Yetzirah is emotions. Bria is higher than that. It's understanding. But Atzilus is even higher than that. It's above understanding. So Atzilus, which is above understanding, ki chokhmas binas vedaita shel ein tzav baruch hu miyuchades sham be'tachlis yichud, because in Atzilus, Hashem's chokhmah bina das are one with Him, meaning they're infinite. That therefore no finite being can grasp them, not even souls and angels. Be yichud atzam v'nifla, His intellect is one with Him in a wondrous type of union. Infinitely more so than in Bria, because down there in Bria, things are concealed, compressed with tzimtzum. So that the created beings are able to receive from His Chochmah Bina Das. Leidas Hashem, to understand, to know Hashem, and to understand some level of understanding of the Infinite One. According to the limited capacities of these created beings. In a way that wouldn't overwhelm them out of existence. And in a way that would not erase them from being created beings, so that they don't revert to their origin and become totally subsumed in godliness. In other words, in Bria, things are diminished enough so that finite entities, very lofty finite entities, souls and angels, but albeit finite, nonetheless, That things are diminished in Bria so that these spiritual entities, which are ultimately finite, are able to receive something from Hashem in accordance with their capacity, and that won't overwhelm them out of existence. V'hine tzimtzum zehi sibas ha'ara shemi iray sham chabad shel ein tzav baruch hu l'nisham eselu be'elam ha'briya. And this tzimtzum, this compression, is what allows the glimmer to shine there of the Chabad of Hashem to these souls in Bria. In other words, if it wouldn't have the effect of Tzimtzum, if it wouldn't be compressed or condensed, then it would be overwhelming and they wouldn't be able to tolerate it. Mashenkin Batzilas, in contrast, that's not so in Atzilas. She'enu bebechinas Tzimtzum kol kach. It's not really subject so much to Tzimtzum. He says kol kach, not so much. Nishta Zayfil. I mean, there is somewhat of a Tzimtzum there because it is an oilam, it is a world, it's just barely a world. Created intellects, meaning even lofty created intellects like angels and souls, are not really able to appreciate anything in Atzilus. It's just too unfiltered. That's why no thought of theirs, meaning of created entities, can grasp anything over there in Atzilus. Lochin hu madu latzadikim emgdeilim. That's why Atzilus is a unique, it's a very exclusive neighborhood. It is the dwelling place of the tzadikim gdeilim. Not just tzadikim, but tzadikim gdeilim. Shavei dosim hi lamayla mayla afilu mebichnis tichilu urechim onim shachas min abina v'das bigdulose yisbarech. The tzadikim gdeilim, the great tzadikim who serve Hashem in a way that's even higher than love and awe which come from intellect. Remember before we were talking about love and awe which come from intellect is the highest level. There's love and awe that come from the instinctive emotions that are hardwired into the neshama. And then there's the higher level, the love and awe that comes from intellect and meditation. We're saying that tzaddikim gedalim have a love and awe of Hashem that comes from even higher than that. Just like Atzilus, respectively, is higher than the intellect of any created being. Rather, these tzaddikim gedalim, these great elite tzaddikim, the way they serve Hashem is in a manner of a merkava, of a chariot. We'll explain what that means, a chariot. In a way where they're totally surrendered, they have no separate existence, and they become totally subsumed within the light of Hashem, them and everything that belongs to them, through the way that they perform mitzvahs with absolute bittul, with absolute surrender. Al derech she'amru, like it says, ha'avos hein hinei merkava. The patriarchs are very much the merkava, the chariot. V'hainu lefi shekol yemeim ha'isa zayis aveidasim, because their entire lives, this was their mode. This is the mode that they were in constantly. They were constantly in a mode of absolute surrender, of really having no separate selfhood, no independent sense of existence other than Hashem's absolute existence. So that's the level of Atzilus. Achmi shesherish nishmasei katan miyachol aveda tamazu. But somebody whose soul root is not lofty enough to reach such a pure service, to become totally absorbed and nullified into Hashem's light in any regular on any regular basis. Rather, they're only capable of doing this once in a while, intermittently. For instance, when they daven Shmin Esrei corresponds to the world of Atzilus, so then they're able to go into that mode of total surrender and losing any separate selfhood. But they're not able to maintain that all day long. The others were able to maintain it all day long, no matter what they were doing, eating, sleeping, drinking, whatever. They're able to constantly maintain that. But there are people who are not tzaddikim gedalim, regular people who can hit that atzilus level when they daven Shmin Esrei, and especially when in the bowing, in the ishtachavois, the bowing of Shmin Esrei, shekol ishtachava hi bechinas atzilus, because every bowing that you do in Shmin Esrei is a is a sort of a reflection of Atzilus Kamisha Kosher Pri Etz Chaim beKabbalas Shabbos, like it says in the Kabbalah Sefer Pri Etz Chaim, in the section about Kabbalah Shabbos, Ki Hi Inyan Bitul Beiris Baruch Liyes Chashiv Kamei Kalei Mamish. That this is the bowing is the idea of totally surrendering to Hashem, in an admission that you have no significance unto yourself. As I gam ken ikur kvias nishmasi hu beilam abriya. So those people who are not able to regularly maintain an atzilus type level of aveda, so their aveda is corresponding to the world of bria. Rak leprokem beis rotzin taylin nishmasi v'latzilus bechinis maynuk v'n kiyidul yedichein. And he says the Kabbalists know that there's an exception to this. Once in a while, they do get a special guest pass into Atzilus through the Mayin Nukvin, through the feminine waters. V'hine schar mitzvah mitzvah. Okay, hold on a second. Let me just stop before we go to schar mitzvah mitzvah, because you're going to think we're repeating ourselves because we started with schar mitzvah mitzvah. Okay. This is what I was dreading. Did I tell you that I was dreading today for over a year? Did I tell you I was dreading today for over a year? Yeah. What was I dreading? Exactly what's happening right now. Everyone's like, this was such an interesting class for over a year of my life. It was so meaningful. Now we just read like a whole page and I don't know what he's talking about. Okay. So, and yeah, and I could just skip it. I could, you know what I could do? I could say, well, you guys, you're not gonna be able to learn it anyway, so I'll just skip it. But if I would have said that, you know what you guys would do? You wouldn't be insulted?
No.
If I would have come in here and say, the following few chapters are a little bit too tough for you guys, I think I'm gonna gloss over.
No.
You wouldn't be insulted?
Yeah. I was.
Yeah, the Shmoneser part was practical. That was a nice little nugget there. I mean, Shmoneser is something that most of us do three times a day, hopefully. Okay, but listen, I know it's a lot of Kabbalistic words, and it's a lot of... It's a lot of taxonomy. It's like describing things with labels and names that are not words that we use in day-to-day conversation. But let me just repeat what I just read in a couple simple English sentences just to prove to you that you're basically following, okay? So don't tune out on me. Okay. What we described is different levels of serving Hashem. And they correspond to different levels of worlds. We said that the lowest level from whence you can muster up some kavana means love and awe of Hashem when you do a mitzvah, the lowest level is you just use your natural, hardwired, instinctive love. We call it avim esoteris. And if you do that, your mitzvah will ascend to the world of yitzira. Very good. And Yetzira is primarily a world of when you serve Hashem with love and awe that come from instinctive love and awe.
Isn't that where the angels are?
The highest, yes, because they are instinctive, because they are an animalist. They are animalistic, yes. Okay, they are creatures of habit, of nature. Okay. And Yetzira, as you mentioned, is primarily a world where what energy is most obvious?
The emotions.
Okay?
Which one's Asiya?
Yetzira. We didn't even speak about Asiya. We didn't really speak about it. Okay. Higher level than that, if you do a mitzvah and your kavana comes from your meditating on what you understand about Hashem, so then the mitzvah reaches a level of bria. And bria is a world where what is the primary basis of reality in bria? Intellect. That's why, what are the entities that hang out in bria? What do they do? What's their experience of reality?
Meditating.
Well, I don't know if we call it meditating. I mean, Down here we call it meditating. But the intellect of Hashem is the fabric of reality in Bria. And it's very pleasurable to have that openly revealed. And that's what the souls and the angels in Bria do. They just are very deeply intellectually immersed in understanding Hashem to their capacity. Obviously, you know, it's limited. And that's what we said. There's a tzimtzum that makes it possible for intellect, for finite intellect to receive these this level of appreciation. Okay? And then we said there are a few people, very few, who their service of Hashem corresponds to Atzilus. And we describe that as being the Aveda of whom? For example, well, we said Tzaddik Medalim, and we specifically singled out, who did we mention? We mentioned the Aves, yeah. And we said the Aves served Hashem in a manner of a what? Merkava, which means total surrender. Now, all of us can have our moments of total surrender. For instance, Shemoneh Esrei, especially when you bow. However, they're moments of surrender. We're not able to maintain that as a constant state of being, whereas the Aves were able to maintain that. Okay? Fine. That's what we just read. You understood all of that, right? Okay. All right.
Isn't there another level?
Where? Oh, because you think about the number four?
Yeah.
I mentioned that we haven't spoken about Asiya.
Oh.
Asiya would be the fourth one that we haven't spoken about. That's the lowest one. So I'll give you a hint. That's when you do a mitzvah with?
Kavana.
No kavana. And what about if you do a mitzvah with worse than kavana, with not just the absence of kavana, but a negative intent? Like to fool people to think you're a good guy so you can rip them off. We'll find out. You know it? Yeah. Okay. We're going to find out. Okay, here we go. V'hine schar mitzvah mitzvah. Now, the reward for a mitzvah is the mitzvah itself, meaning the mitzvah has inherent value. The mitzvah has inherent value. When you do a mitzvah, you're actually creating something. It's not just busy work that has no value. You tell a little kid, because you want to keep them busy, go color in your coloring book and then I'll give you a candy. You don't really want their picture that they're coloring. You're just trying to keep them busy. And then you give them the candy to motivate them to color in the coloring book. But really, the reward has nothing to do with the work. But schar mitzvah means that when you do a mitzvah, you're doing something, you're making something that actually has value. And the reward is to be able to appreciate what you accomplished. Pirush, shimischare neidem ohosa medregasa. This is a very interesting concept here. From the schar of something, you can know what the thing is and you can know its level. In other words, sometimes when you're trying to describe something that's really lofty and indescribable, you can reverse engineer it. And you can deduce, yeah, based on the schar of something, you can figure out what that thing was. So something that might be very lofty, it's hard to describe it, but I'll look at the schar from it, and then I could work my way backward and figure out what it was. So he says like this. Ve'ein lono esek benistaris. We have no business dealing with the concealed things. Meaning there are certain things that are just too lofty for us to understand. Shehem tzadikim agedelim shehem b'chinas merkava. Namely, this discussion of these great tzaddikim who are on the level of Merkava. Guys, don't forget the title of this book. Sefer Shalbeninim, this is a book about regular people. So we don't know anything about tzaddikim gedolim. Like, we mentioned it. We mentioned it. But, like, don't worry too much about it. Raka nigleis lanu. Rather, the revealed things are for us. Shachareyem kol adam yimshoich. And after those things, meaning the regular revealed things, everyone should be drawn. And that is that we should know what is the proper service of Hashem with awe and love in a manner that is revealed in the heart. And specifically, awe and love that come from meditation, which is the higher level of producing awe and love, mekema b'yud sfiras debria, which corresponds to the 10 spheres of bria. V'aveda b'tchilu rechimu hativim shebemeche, or, at least, awe and love that come from the nature of the brain, b'yud sfiras deyitzira, and that would correspond to the 10 spheres of yitzira. Okay. So, since we understand that mitzvahs done with various levels of kavana ascend to various worlds, respectively, that's the schar, we can reverse engineer and we can understand a little bit what it is that the mitzvah actually consists of. If there's a mitzvah done with sufficient intent to reach a world of emotion, like Yetzirah, then we know that what was the mitzvah was an emotional act. And if there's a mitzvah that was infused with sufficient intent to be able to ascend to an intellectual world like Bria, then we understand what was the mitzvah. The mitzvah was an intellectual act. That's all we're saying. Okay?
So, Rebbe,
yeah.
So is it the mitzvahs that are ascending?
The mitzvahs are ascending, and as we said, after 120, the person goes up there, and he hangs out in whatever world his mitzvahs are, and he gets to go to the art gallery of his own art gallery. Yeah, these are his
own
pieces.
Yeah, because yeah, after 11 months.
Well, it doesn't have to be 11 months. You
no?
can go quicker. You can go quicker.
Really?
You know, you don't have to do the whole 11 months.
You have 11 months.
No, that's maximum. But they.
That voice is in your head bothering you.
No, that's maximum already. 11 months. But
oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can get it. You can get quicker. You can, yeah. You have to get a good lawyer, but.
Oh, good.
Yeah, what do you say?
We're talking about the power of Kavanah.
Yeah.
There's so many stories from the Baal Shem Tov where simple folks were able to reach the highest level when there's simplicity.
Okay. So can I ask you a question? So you're talking about the simple folks, the Anashim Pshutim, right? So when the Ish Pashit does a mitzvah, is there love and awe, or is there no love and awe?
There's definitely love and awe.
There is love and awe.
Definitely.
Okay. And where is he or she getting the love and awe from?
From
what?
The latent love.
The latent love. Therefore, the level of that mitzvah is the world of
Yetzirah.
Okay. Very good.
Wow.
But you're saying the Baal Shem Tov loved them so much. Why don't their mitzvahs go up higher? Okay.
So would that mean like in world, like it went up to Atilas with like this simplicity?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question.
And if you're attached to a tzaddik?
I don't know.
Well, no, in 120 years. Easy
task. I don't know. I know that, yeah, I also heard stories about the greatness of the simple people. But
is it simple? Free of sin, free of blemish.
I think simple usually means someone who's not so much of an intellectual.
But if he goes to his highest, like at the end of the day, that's all he could master, and he went to the top of his ability, and therefore he's
kind of
considered
like
so amazing.
Yeah.
Although to us,
I mean, I got to tell you, it's true that the simple shoe, what do you call it, the shoe repairman who says Tillim all day, like that's like the hero of the Baal Shem Tov stories. But I'm going to tell you the reality. It says here in Tanya that the higher level of Kavana is that which is produced through meditation. So
maybe some people don't need that, Rabbi.
Well, some people are not capable of it. He told us that very clearly just now, and also back in chapter 18. He said there are people who are not capable of reaching that. Okay, so they're not capable. They're not capable. Somebody who's not capable and they don't meditate because they're not capable, they're not doing anything wrong.
But maybe his job.
But Rabbi, if you haven't sinned and you don't need to, you just have such an innate love of and awe of Hashem, you don't have to sit and contemplate like I do.
But maybe that job allowed him to meditate, like the shepherds.
You could be simple and meditate. Maybe a different
way. What are you going to say?
You just said that the higher level is that which is produced by meditation.
Yes.
Isolated,
so
not even prior to prayer, just in of itself?
No, I didn't even describe where the meditation takes place or how it's done. We're going to talk about that later, chapters 41 through 50.
So it's not an isolated event. It's connected to a mitzvah you meditate.
We'll talk about that later, how it's actually done, when it's done, yeah.
Rabbi, so is it the intellect you're talking about?
Yes, the intellect,
okay,
yes.
So if you don't have the intellect, you can't meditate.
Right, if you don't have enough intellect.
But maybe intellect does not mean complex. Maybe there's an intellect that's very simple and much more.
Yeah, doesn't mean the person's not smart, just means he's not a deep thinker. Yeah.
Allow them to be surrendered totally to Hashem. So
Okay. Okay, it's beautiful. The Imun HaPshut is beautiful. But want to know something? Anybody who's able to come to this class and follow cannot get away with the Imun HaPshut.
No. I'm not saying.
Okay, we're not putting down the simple people. Okay, but still, the highest level of Kavana is that which comes from meditation. Okay, let's keep going here. Because we described really three levels now. Two levels of Kavana, and then a third level which is like off the charts. And now we're going to talk about another state of being.
So what is the third level that's off the charts?
The Atzilus level, that only the Aves really are there all the time. Okay. Yeah, I guess it is called a kavana. Yeah. It's just not kavana in the way we normally think of it. Yeah. However, when you serve Hashem without arousing any awe or love, even in your brain, right? Even in your brain. Like, if you can't arouse it in your heart and feel it as an emotion, at least think about it in your brain. Remember we spoke about that in chapters 16 and 17, we spoke about the tvunais, that if you can't get your heart to actually feel it, at least think about it and relate to it as a concept. But no, somebody who doesn't even do that. He doesn't even arouse the latent love, the native love that is latent within the heart, and bring it out into a revealed state. He doesn't even do that. But rather he leaves that latent love latent. He leaves it buried in his heart, just like the way it was when he was born. Just like it was before he started serving. This service of Hashem, it stays down here in the world of separation, which is called the outer worlds. It doesn't have the power to rise up and to become included within within Hashem's oneness, which are namely the 10 spheres. It can't be absorbed in the ten spheres. It just stays down here. Ukamesha Kosar, but in the physical world where he did the mitzvah. Yeah. Now he still did the mitzvah, and the mitzvah still has the refining effect that we learned about in 35, 36, and 37. But the kavana, there's no kavana, so it doesn't have that spiritual liftoff. Ukamesha Kosar b'tikunim, like it says in Tikkun Ezeir, deblo dechilu rechimu leparch leila. Without awe and love, the mitzvahs won't fly aloft. And they cannot go and stand, go up and stand before Hashem. And by the way, we're not even talking about somebody who does a mitzvah, what we call shalei lishma mamish, with a negative intent, with an ulterior motive. But rather, what are we talking about? V'ti yirasim esi mitzvahs anashim. We're talking about somebody who does a mitzvah by rote. Pirish machmas hergul shahugul makatnusay. He does it based on the habit which he formed from his childhood. Shehir giloi v'limdei aviv v'rabei liroi es Hashem l'avdei. His father and his teacher habituated him to fear Hashem and to serve Hashem. Ve'enes esek l'shmo mamash. He's not really serving Hashem for Hashem's own sake. He's doing it because it's habit. So is it still a mitzvah? Yeah, it's still a mitzvah, but it doesn't rise up to any world. Yeah.
Doesn't this negate the fact that doing the mitzvah itself takes on a spiritual...
I just said the mitzvah's still a mitzvah.
Right, but the mitzvah itself could be enhanced as you're doing
it. Yeah, and it didn't get enhanced.
It sounds like you're in a plane, you don't take off.
Or no, you know what it is? It's like getting in a plane and driving it across country. Yeah, you could do that. So he's just doing it out of habit. Okay, I didn't say it's not a mitzvah. It's still a mitzvah, but it doesn't have that in enhanced impact, and it doesn't go up to any of the spiritual worlds. It's not serving Hashem for Hashem's sake. Because to serve Hashem for the sake of the service itself is only possible if at least you arouse the latent love. At least the latent love. To at least bring that out of the concealment of the heart and into the revelation, and at least in the brain. At least in the brain. Just like a person doesn't do anything for somebody else unless either he loves him or he fears him. In other words, if you're motivated to do something for somebody, there has to be a motivation. What's the motivation? Either love or fear. So too, it's impossible to be motivated to serve Hashem if you don't at least, he calls it, remember the thoughts that are in the mind and the recesses of the heart. That's the way he refers to the lower level, the Ava Misoteres, the natural instinctive love. He calls it a memory, sort of like spiritual nostalgia. You know, like that trigger of that, like that feeling of that warm, fuzzy feeling, that familiar feeling. It's not deep, it's not intellectual, but it's something. And so that's the lower level. And he's saying, this guy didn't even do that. Yeah.
So according to Tanya, is it better to give $1 a day for tzedakah or $100 once for 100 days?
How does that pertain to this?
Because kavana. And sometimes
no, but your two scenarios have nothing to do with kavana. They have to do with two different ways of doing it. They have nothing to do with two levels of kavana.
Right, so by
you should ask me. You should ask me. Rote doesn't mean inherently that it's a repetitive act. Why don't you make it an apples-to-apples comparison and say, according to Tanya, is it better to give a dollar to tzedakah with no intent, or is it better to give a dollar to tzedakah with intent?
Well,
What's the answer? Of course it's better to give with intent. Now let me ask you a real question. Is it better to give tzedakah without intent or not to give tzedakah at all?
Without intent.
To give it without intent. Obviously, we're not telling you not to do mitzvahs.
Yeah, but if it doesn't go up, what's the point?
Oh, I'm so upset that you said that. Come on. I said clearly. I said, and on your birthday, no less. Okay. You have to redeem yourself here. I said clearly before, the mitzvah's still a mitzvah.
Yeah, but it doesn't go up.
Don't worry about up. Don't worry about up. Tell me, what does a mitzvah do? Come on, don't forget 35, 36, 37. It brings Mashiach. Okay, that's not chapped liver. You know what? You know what? Come on. Remember what we said before? Why is it depressing? Okay, we can't have everything. And it's not like there's nothing you can do about it. It's not like it's unchangeable. Like, you could just have more kavanah next time. It's not like it's unfixable.
But then can't you have tshuva ma'ahava and then it elevates it?
Oh, okay, yeah, that's always the sneak, that's the hack, is always the tshuva ma'ahava. What? Yeah.
A few sentences back.
Yeah.
The rabbi said something about you only do something, you can only do it for your own, like, family. You can't, or for someone
No, for
love.
Somebody you love or fear.
Right, somebody you love or fear.
He's just explaining as a mashal. He's saying, that if you do something, you have to have a motive to do it.
Right.
I'm not going to, if I do something for somebody, it's because I must have some level of feeling. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. I would do nothing. So he's saying at least you should at least have some level of intent.
That kind of sounds like the Hasidic bird.
The Hasidic bird that only helps her own kind?
Yeah.
No, that's not what it's saying. It's just a marshal. He's just explaining that if somebody does something, they have to have a motive.
So is that a good thing?
It's not good or bad. It's a fact. When people do things, they do it because they have a motive to do it. People don't do things randomly unless they have a neurological issue where they do stuff that they can't control themselves.
But why can't the mitzvah be motive
if
enough?
If you have love and fear.
The mitzvah can't be a motive enough? Well, why is the mitzvah motivating? That's my question. Why do you think a mitzvah is motivating? Well, hold on a second. Why is a mitzvah motivating? Why do you care about a mitzvah?
Because we know that's the way to enhance bringing Mashiach.
Okay. So that sounds like you're thinking a thought about it. It's causing you to value it.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's
and
the
that's
intellectual law, love
by
and all.
By rote is better than doing it once.
But that's not by rote. What you just described is an intellectual kavana.
So maybe you have kavana, you don't even realize it.
Is it the same with mitzvahs as it is with tefillah? Like one tefillah, good tefillah, elevates all the other ones. Does it work the same with the mitzvahs?
The tefillah is a little bit different, but yeah. Okay, all right, can we finish this chapter? Yeah, I would love to finish this chapter. What?
So the love and the fear.
Yeah.
The ultimate is to have love and
yes. Don't worry. The love and fear of people was just a mashal. It was just a mashal. It was literally just a mashal. We're not talking about it. Hold on a second. Mitzvah gereres mitzvah. That you get momentum. That you do a mitzvah and it becomes more becomes easier to do the next mitzvah. Not necessarily intent. At least you're doing it. At least you're doing something good. Now, I wonder if we could say that mitzvah gereres mitzvah applies to kavana as well. If you do a mitzvah with kavana, then it becomes easier the next time to do it with kavana again. Probably, yes. Probably it works with that. The thing, it was just a marshal. He was making a statement. When people do things, they have a reason why they did it. That's it.
And then you have to have a reason.
You must have been motivated to do it. Why were you motivated to do it?
So yeah. Is that motivation also part of your kavana?
Motivation is kavana. Why did you do the mitzvah? I know what you did. You did a mitzvah. Why did you do it? What your answer to that question is, that's your code. Exactly. Exactly. That's it. Yeah.
So we mostly do kavana stuff. We just don't like meditate on the kavana.
Let's say I davened with kavana.
Davening is a little bit different. If davening, I mean, I don't want to get into this right now, but if you can do one tefillah put together from all the tefillahs of a year, it elevates all your davening.
One tefillah?
Basically, if you can cut and paste words from all your tefillahs from the whole year, and if you put together one good davening from all of the year, what? Like what?
No.
Whatever. Like regular days.
Seriously?
You do it every day, but you only do one section.
No, you put together one whole davening. You take one word from this day and another word from another day, and you cut and paste. You take the best, you take the greatest hits. Yeah.
Okay, you just said motivation is kavana.
Yes.
There anything else besides motivation in kavana?
No, motivation is kavana. That's all it is. Kavana. That's all it is. It's a synonym. Kavana and motivation are synonymous. Okay. Let's keep going, because I would love to finish today's chapter. V'gam ava levada einani kris b'shem aveda. Wait, hold on a second. Is that right? Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. So he said... hold on, let me make sure I'm in the right spot. It's not enough to just have one motivation, to have love. You have to also have awe, at least the lower level of awe. We're going to explain that later, so we're not going to get into that now. However, let's say you do a mitzvah really with no good intent at all, not just neutral intent or lack of intent, but really a negative intent, like you do it to build up your own reputation. Like you want to make a reputation of for yourself as a scholar. So azai then that ulterior motive comes from klipas noiga. It's not shalish klipas tameis. It's not an aveda. It's not an outright sin, but it's certainly not holy. So it's klipas noiga. Mislabeshes b'teirase. So now that klipa of klipas noiga gets into your Torah that you're learning for that reason. And then, unfortunately, the Torah that you're learning is stuck in exile in that klipa. But it's temporary. Until you do tshuva, which brings healing to the world. Then when you do tshuva, then all the Torah that you learned for an ulterior motive will also be able to get redeemed out of that state, and then that can go up again according to whatever kavana you switch to. That's why our sages say, "La'ilam yaseh godem chulishim etech shalei lishma bo lishma bevada." That's why our sages say that a person should always engage in Torah mitzvahs even without kavana, meaning shalei lishma, without the right intention, because if you'll do that, certainly, you will come to lishma. Because eventually you're going to do tshuva, whether in this lifetime or in the next reincarnation. Sooner or later, there's always the next reincarnation. You might do tshuva then. Yeah. Because no one will be utterly thrust away. Eventually, everybody gets in. Everybody makes it. Ach, kisha eisestam, lay lishma, valay shalay lishma. But let's say a person does a mitzvah stam, he calls it. Not lishma and not shalei lishma, meaning not for the love of Hashem or awe of Hashem, but also not for any selfish reason, just neutrally. Why did you do it? I don't know. I'm just used to doing it. It's just my habit. Okay, let's say you just did it that way. Then, ein hadavar talui b'tshuva. Then, getting the mitzvah redeemed out of that state doesn't depend on tshuva. Because remember we said before, if he does it for a not nice intent, he needs to do tshuva before he can get the mitzvah out of that captivity. But here, he didn't do it for a not nice intent. He just did it with zero intent. So now it doesn't even require tshuva. But rather, immediately, once he starts getting back on track and learning for the right reasons, then that which he learned without intent will be combined to that which he is now learning with intent, and it flies up with it. Hooray. Because, after all, it didn't get caught up in the klipas noiga. When he was doing it in order to become a Torah scholar and be respected, then it got caught up in klipas noiga, and he has to do tshuva to get it out of that state. But here he just did it without any kavana, without any particular thought at all. So to get it out, all you have to do is just wake up. And, oh, I'm sorry, oh, I wasn't thinking. Let me go back on track, and let me serve Hashem for the right reasons. And then it just all gets fixed and it flies up. That's why we say a person should always engage in Torah mitzvahs even without intent, because he'll come to do it with intent. Why do we say that? Now he's explaining to us a deeper understanding of that saying. It's a deeper understanding of we have a deeper understanding of why we say a person should always engage in Torah mitzvahs even without intent. Because what we're saying is, the stuff that you did without intent, it doesn't go to waste. You can combine it retroactively with the stuff that you start to do with intent, and then the whole thing gets lifted. Okay, so it's an investment. And also, tefillah without kavana, as he explains in the Zayar, a similar concept that you can lift up the davening that had no intent. I'm not talking about the davening that was for negative intent, but I'm saying the davening was just thoughtless, mindless by rote. You could lift that up by just getting back on track and focusing and davening for the right reason. Okay? That's the end of chapter 39. I'm so relieved. We have what? But we're not done yet. We have one, I told you, 38, 39, and 40 are the most formidable chapters. So we have one more chapter like this. And then, for me at least, it gets a little bit easier. Okay.
And chapter 40 is also Kavana?
Yes, 40 is also Kavana, yes.